Hello, 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 and welcome back to this week's episode of the Mike the Gardener Gardening Podcast, sponsored by those lovely people at Natural Grower, who supply plant-based products for both organic and chemical-free gardening and your houseplants. This episode of the Mike the Gardener Gardening Podcast with Jekka McVicar was recorded a few weeks ago and before the sad passing of Her Majesty Queen Elizabeth II. And welcome back to this week's super special episode of the Mike the Gardener Gardening Podcast. And I'm recording this intro on the afternoon of a very wonderful visit to Bristol, and more specifically, a visit to chat with the wonderful Queen of Herbs, Jekka McVicar. Now, I've been trying to catch up with Jekka for over a couple of years now. In fact, just before lockdown in the UK, I'd almost secured that interview with her son Alistair. But then, of course, the rest is history. We went into lockdown and it didn't happen. I was gutted, to say the very least. But they do say that patience is a virtue, and further, that the best things in life are worth waiting for. And so my visit to Jekka's today was all the more sweeter for having had to wait for so long. After a fairly pleasant journey, rain, sun, more rain, but then finally lots of sun, I arrived at the nursery to be met by Jekka's husband, Mac. And before I knew it, Jekka was taking me on a personal guided tour of her wonderful nursery. Now, as you'll hear in this episode, Jekka's passion is infectious. As we walked around, leaf after leaf was crushed and passed to me either to smell or to taste. Now, I freely admitted to Jekka, put my hands in the air, I'm a flower gardener. And aside from my time at Horticultural College 100 years ago, I've not really grown herbs in my own garden. Or at least that's what I thought. But I am growing Primula vulgaris, Primula veris and fennel, amongst other things, which, and well, the fennel's an obvious one. I knew that was a herb, but the primulas, I wasn't really aware that they were herbs. But I can tell you something, there were some pretty amazing herbs there. And with a signed copy of Jekka's book under my arm, I'll now be nipping down to the garden centre, PDQ, to start my own herb collection here. I started our chat by asking Jekka if she'd had a vision for the nursery she has now when she got started in 1984.
Hannah was born in 1982. Alistair was born in 1983.
Ooh.
I had no idea when I was sitting at my kitchen table that today I'd be sitting at the same kitchen table.
Really?
Literally the same kitchen table, having this discussion with you in what is now our school, which was our mail order dispatch and potting shed, that I'd still be going all these years later, that the nursery would have evolved. We're not the same nursery. I mean, if you think, okay, we started in our back garden and outgrew that. I mean, poor Mac came home from work one day and said, either you stop or we move. So we moved, and the cottage we got was totally derelict, so we moved into the mobile home. And if you listen carefully, you can hear my husband digging. This is our new herb garden. It's just happening outside the window here. So if you hear bang, bang, that's what it is. Anyway, back to the journey. I had no idea. I had no idea that we'd be awarded gold medal at Chelsea. You know, or the Lawrence medal for the best exhibit shown in any one year. Or that I would be awarded the VMH. Victoria Medal of Honor. You've got to realise that to me was... All of those were amazing because I landed up at the RHS because of a hot summer.
Explain.
Right. 1992 was a hot summer.
Mm-hmm.
And the garden centres, I was wholesaling those days, wouldn't buy my herbs because people weren't gardening because it was too hot.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I had all this stock. So I got in my little car and I drove down to Noel Kingsbury, who had a nursery at Sunbeam Nurseries.
Okay.
All right. And I was moaning away to Noel and he was loading his lorry. And I said, "Where are you going?" He said, "I'm going to the RHS. Why don't you exhibit at the RHS?" And for me, the RHS, the Royal Horticultural Society. I mean, yeah, I come from a families of serious, serious gardeners. I mean, yeah, where they all spoke posh Latin, and I thought they were the most boring things on the planet. And, yeah, it was just something I couldn't comprehend. So now, sitting to you today to say, I did that, and I did this, and yeah, and I'm still here.
So what actually instigated this interest in herbs? Because I know you gardened with, was it your grandmother?
Well, my grandmother wrote cookery books.
That's right, yeah.
Lovely Food, More Lovely Food, and Food for Pleasure.
Ruth Lewinsky?
Lewinsky. Yeah.
Lewinsky.
Yeah. And my mum inherited her passion for good food and was an absolutely smashing cook and had a veg garden and had a herb garden. So I grew up via food, and so my entree into the whole horticultural world was by food.
Mm.
I didn't want to grow anything that wasn't of use. And bear in mind that I was in a semi-detached in Bristol with a tiny garden.
How big a garden were you talking about?
Less than this room.
Goodness me. Okay, so we're what, about sort of 10 metres by 4 or 5 metres?
Mm.
That is a small space to be growing from.
Yeah, and we used to supply shops and Fortnum's.
Yeah, Fortnum and Mason. I mean, how do you go to Fortnum and Mason with a garden this size and say, buy herbs from me?
Well, I did a plant sale for Red Cross. It was Mary Berry's talk. And Mary Berry has just been fantastic to me. I mean, yeah, throughout the years that we've met, she's really helped promote horticulture.
Mm.
And it is fascinating, isn't it? I'm going to wind you back because a nursery is something which you're selling the plants, propagating plants, growing plants, and making a sort of living.
Mm.
Now, my biggest fear now, out of the whole of the future of horticulture, is the plant collections. We need to urgently protect these collections because without this small nursery, without the specialist nursery, you're not going to have the diversity, let alone for your garden, for pollinators and everything, but also from the herb point of view, herbs may have the answer through their medicinal properties to new modern diseases. Now, we're being bombarded with modern disease at the moment.
Oh, very much so.
And, you know, I grow Dichora febrifuge, which is a Chinese medicinal plant, which they used to use for treatment of malaria. But now they've found out that it's fantastic at rebuilding the autoimmune system. Now, if this plant became extinct, how would they have found that out? All you hear on the news is that we're losing all these insects, we're losing all the birds, we're losing everything, and we're losing plants and our UK native flora and fauna. Without the small nursery that is as nutty as I am, who go on collecting these plants, you know, who treasure them and keep finding new ones, are we going to close that door? You go to the flower shows now.
Yeah.
And I've been to a number of plant sales and flower shows. The small nursery is getting smaller. The exhibits are getting smaller.
Mm.
The collections are getting smaller. The garden centres are all selling the same thing. The skill of the propagator has virtually vanished.
Yeah, yeah.
And knowing how to propagate and when to propagate and all the different methods of propagating. It's not just, you know, softwood, hardwood, and so on. There are other ways of doing it as well. And all of this is slowly vanishing. you know, for heaven's sake, I'm a 3 school years and 10, and I am desperate to hand on the knowledge so that people understand plants, understand the power of plants, understand how where we can get from A to B. And so that passion has underlined everything that I've done. So when I started, it was plants have to be of use. I have no room. They have to be useful. And then it grew and my collection grew. And then when we moved here, I suddenly had the glass house and I had that extra space. Then I had the tunnels, you know, and I had more space. And it's amazing. Give a plant nut space and they'll fill
it. They'll use it.
Yeah.
So going back to the nursery thing, what is it that makes a nursery? What is the dividing line between just being a nursery or being a hobbyist? Is there something...
I think the hobbyist is not having to make a living.
So when you had your semi-detached with your small garden...
Yeah.
Were you a hobbyist then, or did you see yourself as a nursery because you were...
I was a nursery because I was actually... I was self-financing and breaking even.
Mm.
I couldn't do anything without doing that. I didn't have the finance. Remember, I wasn't earning. I'd given up my career. My children are a year gap between them, or just over. You know, and my husband was working abroad, so I had to make an income. So my nursery has always been... like that, and I have always propagated, because in those days you couldn't buy in your rooted cuttings that you can now. And this is the sad thing, that a lot of nurseries now don't propagate. So they buy in all their rooted cuttings. So, for example, herbs, 90% of the herbs come in from Israel.
Okay, as rooted cuttings.
2 jumbo jets a day used to come in at the height of the season.
With the attached carbon footprint to that, which we can do in this own own country. Mm. Now,
but we're not sponsored.
You see,
this is the big difference. We're 1 hectare here, and we fall under the radar of any sponsorship, any support. So everything we've done, that's the trouble with a small nursery, is you can't get the grants, which you can if you're a bigger nursery.
And I guess then, looking at the future of nurseries, it's for those small outfits initially. How do you go from that to where you are now without that funding? What's the answer to that?
Passion. The only way we got here was being passionate and stubborn and not giving in and working a 7-day week.
Which you still do.
Which we both still do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's full on, you know, that passion and the commitment required.
It is, but plants grow 7 days a week.
Yeah, they don't stop at the weekends.
Yeah, or Christmas. You know, they are still growing and people, you know, and I'm afraid today that doesn't quite correlate into how people like to live their lives. Must have me time.
Yeah.
I do have me time. Me time can be going, wow, that's flowered for the first time. How exciting is that? You know, that's my sudden me time. Or, you know, I love photography. So I think modern technology is amazing. Mm. The fact I can have my phone as my camera and I can now capture that moment that plant flowers or the butterfly visits that plant is just magic.
I want to take you back to the propagation thing. Is it your great-grandfather who was passionate about propagation? And
I didn't know this until, I think it was my great-great-grandfather. Yes, must be great-great-grandfather.
Okay.
He had a house down the road here. I mean, literally 5 minutes away from here. And he collected plants and he used to take people, he was a great propagator, he used to take people around and show them at night, and he only had matches to show them by. So one box of matches, that's all he was allowed by his wife. but it's interesting that it skipped generations.
Hmm.
You know, still a love of plants from my father. And my father's father, no, he didn't. But, you know, it is interesting how... it got passed down.
Yeah.
And But being a propagator, you're looking at the minute.
Yeah.
It's the fascination of the minute and the taking the time to look and understand how that plant grows.
And that, for me, I love propagating plants. I haven't got any room for any more plants, but I still propagate just because I love the process. I love the actual seeing a plant grow away from a tiny cutting, which is amazing. It keeps that spark going.
Mm, it really does.
Now, was it your grandfather or your great-grandfather who actually displayed at Chelsea?
It was my great-great-grandfather on the other side.
Right.
And my great-great-aunt, Xenia, who was the gardening correspondent for the Daily Mail? No, the Mirror. And I've got photographs of her in Hyde Park giving a lecture and everyone's sitting in those old-fashioned deck chairs.
No.
And she exhibited auriculas. And my great-great-grandfather exhibited, I want to say rhodos, but I'm pretty sure it's rhododendrons, because there's one called T.E. Lowensky, which is my great-great-grandmother.
Good. Now, I mean, this is fascinating, because now you exhibit, well, you've exhibited at Chelsea.
Mm.
How was it for you to follow in the family footsteps, almost?
And but I didn't know.
No.
I didn't know then. I mean, my first Chelsea, oh my goodness. In 1992... I exhibited at the Halls, courtesy of Noel Kingsbury.
Mm.
But it was October. October for herbs, bonkers.
Yeah.
And in those days, you had to get a silver medal before you were allowed to have a sales table.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yes.
Okay.
That's why the exhibits were so good.
Because they're all aiming for this medal.
You had to get this silver. And also, if you got a number of bronzes, you were sort of poo-pooed again. I mean, it was really, really strict in this. And as a woman, I had to wear a skirt and all my plants were under my stand and you had to get on your hands and knees and not show your bottom to everyone. And anyway, so I was standing on my stand and this lovely lady, bless her consorts, all 5'4" of her, comes up, Mavis Sweetingham.
Okay.
Sweetingham Steps at Chelsea Flower Show.
Okay, right. They
were named after her.
Yeah.
Mavis comes up and says, Jacob, we'd like you to apply for Chelsea, to exhibit herbs at Chelsea. And I said, yes, Mavis. And the person, I can't remember who it was exhibiting next door to me, said, that's the right answer. You only say yes to Mavis. So I go to a call box, because there were no mobiles, and ring my husband and said, what are you doing next May? What are we going to do with the children? And will you be in England? And can we do Chelsea? So we did Chelsea. We borrowed a horse box from our neighbours to get the plants up there.
Yeah.
We borrowed a caravan, because in those days we were allowed to put a caravan in Battersea Car Park.
To stay whilst you were building the display?
No, it's just stay for the whole show.
Oh, okay. Yes.
I mean, hardy perennials. And I didn't know that we wouldn't be able to put the tail lift down on the ramp down.
The tailgate or the horse box?
No, because it wasn't room, because they bring the lorries in like this.
Oh, you all concertinaed sort of like close together.
Mm.
So what did you do?
I cried.
Oh, your plants are in there.
Cried. No, I didn't cry, actually. I tried to get people to reverse so that we could open it. So we didn't start building then until the Saturday.
Mm.
We thought we had lots of time until the Monday, because judging was Monday lunch. But no one had told me that on Sunday, the pensioners and their families in those days, and their buggies and their children were allowed in for a private view. All my plants were around on the floor.
This looks nice.
Also, no one told me that the TV would want to film, because you're new.
Yeah.
Yeah, everyone's briefed now, so there's no problem at all.
But,
of course, in those days, it just didn't happen. Anyway, so it was amazing. And then, to cap it all, cap it all. Okay, the RHS said to me, no, don't worry, you're new. So you just stand here by your stand, okay? And the royal families will come in and they'll just mill around. You may not see anyone, but you may have suddenly lots and then none. But Her Majesty won't be calling, okay? Because you're not on her route.
Mm.
So I'm standing at the back. I've done a little island site and I'm standing at the back here, okay? And royal party's coming round and I'm just sort of looking at, oh, this is fun. Yeah, in best gear. I mean, you wore...
In
really,
your dress,
You're really posh.
Yeah.
And Her Majesty comes up towards my stand and stops.
Oh, goodness.
And the then president, who I will not name, didn't know who I was, said, hey, you all, come here, explain your herbs to Her Majesty. Yeah, so anyway, so I landed up meeting Her Majesty and explaining the plants, and it was great.
Now, just to pick up on the royal theme here, rumour has it, now I don't know if there's have you heard this? You know I'm going with this. There's a knowing look on your face. Her Royal Highness the Queen gave Kate Middleton a copy of Jecker's Herb Cookbook in 2011.
Yeah, right. In 2010, my cookbook came out.
That's right, yeah.
And Liz Banks was showing the Duke of Edinburgh around.
Mm.
And I'd already got permission from the palace to present one to Her Majesty, which I did. But Liz Banks was showing Duke of Edinburgh. Duke of Edinburgh, by then, didn't like the floral marquee, got bored, was much more interested in the tractors and the green egg and things like this. And anyway, Liz was obviously wanting people to talk to him. So she introduced me and said, this is Jekka, she just bought her new book. So Duke of Edinburgh bound onto the stand and starts flicking through it. He said, oh, like this book. Why does fennel stop flatulence? So I looked at him and went, well, sir, if you weren't the Duke of Edinburgh, I could tell you, but I can't. He said, oh, for heaven's sake, girl, spit it out. So I explained. Then he started reading again and said, oh, you've spelt something wrong here. It's, I've forgotten what the word was now, something or other. And I said, no, it's definitely this. And he said, no, it's, he said, I really rather like this book. I said, would you like a copy, sir? He said, oh, yes, please. I said, well, I've just given one to your wife. Oh, Jekka, honestly. He said, he didn't bat an eyelid. He just said, that's no good. She doesn't choose the menus, I do.
Oh.
He said, I'm the one who does the cooking. So I solemnly gave him a book.
Mm.
And I had this wonderful image of them both sitting side by side.
Isn't her
reading
books.
My book.
On their thrones.
So I think this is why Kate landed up with a copy of my book. It was in one of those magazines, Grazia, I think it was mentioned.
Okay.
Yeah. But the best time of all for me was when I was accused of killing the Queen.
Oh, come on then.
In 2016, I did the St. John Hospice Garden. It's the last time I exhibited at the show. And Lady Bacon had done a bouquet of flowers to give to Her Majesty. And it was all herbs. And in the bouquet was lilies of the valley. And I gave it to Her Majesty. And Her Majesty said, oh, lovely. She said, I didn't know lilies of the valley were a herb. And I said, yes, ma'am. I said, actually, I was asked by an author to choose a herb that you could kill someone with, which they wouldn't realise was a herb. And I said, but it's the same properties as digitalin. It's the same properties as foxgloves.
Mm.
Oh, she said, lots of people have been giving me these lately. Do you think someone wants me dead? Well, this was just a conversation with the two of us, but you know what the press are like at Chelsea.
Yeah,
got overheard and it got blown out of all proportions and,
So that was 2016.
Yes.
That was your modern apothecary garden.
Yes, which we planted at St. John's and it's still going well.
And that earned you a silver gilt medal.
Oh, yeah. Amazing.
Main Avenue.
No.
Oh, not Main Avenue.
Side Avenue. Yes, side.
Now, I remember you.
I was opposite the, where they had the trade stand. I was in between trade stands, which was slightly difficult.
Yeah.
A trade stand either side of me and the back of me. And then it was Chris Beardshaw was next door to that.
Okay. Your memories of the Chelsea days, what's your overriding feeling of those days? Because you displayed, you're in the sort of pavilion.
I've done every aspect, haven't
yeah.
I? Because I've done the Great Pavilion. I think that was for near enough 20 years. I then did outside for 5 years, and then I did the garden. I judged for 25 years.
Mm.
This year I went to Chelsea not doing anything for the first time.
And how was that?
It was heaven. I could see things. And I realised that all the years, I used to make myself go in early to the show so I could see the gardens before the show opened, or go around the floral marquee before anyone was in, so I could definitely see everything.
Mm.
And yes, it was like a huge weight had gone from my shoulders. But it is a show that is rather like a disease.
Go on.
It's the best flower show in the world.
Mm-hmm.
But it's rather like a big tankard. It needs to be turned round.
Yeah, I see what you're saying. And how and why?
Because things have changed. The nurseries, I mean, this year, there were so few nurseries at the show. This is for a number of reasons. One, we're old. Two, COVID made nurseries realise they didn't need to do Chelsea.
Because there's been other options that we've all had
to
look at.
We've all had to.
Yeah.
And being a nursery, we're small, so we've had to adapt quickly.
Mm.
And because of the driving into London restrictions, you know, for your vehicles.
Mm, of course, yeah.
Cost of transport. So whereas the last exhibit I did in the Great Marquee took 2 7.5-ton lorries full.
Right,
to do that exhibit in the Great Marquee. Now people will do it in one, you know, 320, and that's it. And have the sales stock.
Yeah.
I think it is, everything has got smaller. So as the stands have got smaller, so have the display plants.
Mm.
They're all smaller. Everything has shrunk. And in that Great Pavilion, they seem to get lost.
It's a big space.
It's a big space.
Yeah.
You need to do an exhibit that is a statement.
Mm.
And I know that the RHS are very aware, and I know that, you know, Keith Reid is desperate to find a way through this, and I know that everyone is working flat out to try and help the nursery. But I'm not sure, rather like global warming, that we've got the timing right.
How do you mean?
Well, if I use my nursery as an example.
Yeah.
I've just shown you around, and I've reduced the size of where we're producing the stock by creating this huge garden.
Yeah.
That used to be all stock plants for sale. That's used
right,
to be all sales.
Yeah, and that's quite a big area still.
And I'm cutting one bay off that polytunnel
yeah.
and turning it into a cold tunnel.
Mm.
So, you know, and I've only got one row of sale stock outside.
Yeah.
Instead, I had 6 rows before. We are all shrinking. Finance, water, heating, everything. So the nurseries are having to, who don't want to give up, like me, I do not want to give up, are having to adapt to how we can actually survive.
And then there's the funding that we talked about earlier. If you're self-funding that...
Always self-funding.
It's continual work, 7 days a week, continual funding for all the things you've just mentioned then.
Yeah.
It's tough out there.
It's really tough out there. You have to be passionate about what you do.
And
I'm lucky. I'm, you know, just being commissioned to write another book. You know, fabulous.
So many questions. Which way shall I go with this one? The passion, we've walked around the nursery.
Yeah.
And your passion is, it just oozes from you. You're showing me all of these plants. We're crushing the leaves. We're smelling. We're tasting.
He's very good. He ate a Sichuan pepper, by the way.
The top of a battery, like putting your tongue on the top of a battery. But your passion, it's just, and I said right from the word go, I trained in horticulture 100 years ago. I love horticulture, but I've never really done herbs. But walking around with you, it's there. It's infectious. I'm going away thinking, where can I get some? Where can I get one of those? The Sichuan.
Yeah.
Some of those herbs out there, the taste.
The taste is amazing, isn't it? And the other plant I gave him was the beef and onion plant, which is a huge tree. So you don't want it in your little garden. It's huge.
But that lovely taste of beef and onion crisps.
I know.
Or Bovril crisps from however many years ago they used to make those. Wonderful. It's just incredible.
It is incredible. And nature is incredible. And plants are incredible. And so I think I've tried to be really optimistic that there is a future for everybody.
Mm.
But I fear unless somebody wakes up like you, like the RHS, and says, hey, nurseries, we need you. We need you to be the custodians because the government won't help us. I mean, there's no money at all for us kind of things. And DEFRA, you know, when I wrote to DEFRA non-stop when they closed us the second time, you know, having closed us down earlier when in COVID, in the January, they suddenly announced that nurseries, garden centres could open, but nurseries were not essential. So we lost another Easter. You know, and that's our bread and butter. You know, I kept writing to DEFRA, but, you know, I'm a tiny nursery.
Mm.
It didn't mean a thing.
There was another question I was going to ask. You mentioned a new book. Can you tell us anything about the new book?
New book. I hand in next March.
Right.
And I've got my first meeting about it here this week, and I've started writing like mad because it's very big, and because I hand in 31 weeks, just to let you know, 31 weeks the 1st of March from now.
Scary.
Well, it is, and you think that's spring gone.
Yeah, that's.
And I've also got coming in August, I've got 3 people wanting me to grow for Chelsea next year.
Wow. How do you sleep at night? Do you just now take this in your stride? Is this your life? And it's like, that's no problem, bring it on?
No. I grew for Sarah Ebley this year for Chelsea. Gosh, that was a stunning garden.
It was. Wasn't that a beautiful garden? Yeah.
Amazing. The imagination.
Yeah.
Anyway, I said after that I wouldn't grow for anyone again.
Oh.
But I'm allowing 3 people in. They're going to have to convince me. They're going to have a really good reason.
But you've allowed them in. So are they in?
No, they're coming to see, to talk to me.
Oh, I see. So they're going to have to put in a really good pitch.
Mm. Yep, absolutely. So watch this space.
Oh, well, yeah, we will do. So the writing process, your passion we just talked about.
Yeah.
How easy do you find writing about something that you're passionate about?
Well, I find it very easy. My first book, The Complete Herb Book, is still in print 28 years later.
Mm.
But in those 28 years, well, it's 29 years since I wrote it, it's 28 years published, everything's changed. The plant families have changed.
Mm. Yes.
Yeah. Right? Labiate, Lamiaceae, you know, all that's changed. Botanical names have changed.
Rosemary isn't rosemary anymore.
Salvia,
Yeah.
So I'm afraid you can go on and on. There's so much that has changed. But for me, I needed to write about how the weather's changed and where you grow things and how you grow things, because so much has changed. I've kept temperature records from when we moved here, right the way through. Yes, we did have the hottest day here. We were 52.8 in the tunnels.
I was going to say, I think 40.2 at Heathrow Airport.
In the tunnels.
52.
Yeah.
That's got to have an impact on where we grow, we grow going into the future.
Yeah, because, I mean, are we going to keep tunnels? That's why I'm creating a cold tunnel.
Mm.
So all I would do is protect it from the heavy rain.
Right, yeah.
But my temperature is much easier to control.
So again, for those who have nurseries, keeping an eye on the future, keeping an eye on what's growing well, keeping an eye on what's not growing so well with these new
conditions. And cutting down watering.
Yeah.
So what Mike is building for me into this garden is a watering system, so we have minimum water and no waste.
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, you're thinking all the time.
Touching on the garden, when will the garden be open? When can people see the garden?
Well, it was meant to be earlier, but unfortunately the metal edging, there was a slight technical hitch. I'm hoping we're going to have Herb Fest again next year. We run it every 2 years.
Yeah.
So it'll be on next June, end of June, July. So I will definitely be finished by then. But I'm hoping to plant the hardy herbaceous this autumn, the gravel garden and everything else in the spring. So by June, it should be looking splendiferous.
So that would be exciting to see. Having seen the work in progress, to see Mac out there digging away, I look forward to seeing that. Talking of Herb Fest then, this is it's a family business.
Yes.
How does this all come together? What does it involve? Who's doing what?
Okay, basically Herb Fest came up on a car journey that we should have something which encompasses. The great thing about herbs, unlike a lot of other plants, is that we are used in the kitchen, we're used for health, we're used for pollinators. So we have top chefs coming to talk and demonstrate. We have garden designers coming to talk. We have herbalists here talking about herbs, and they also have a little practice, so you can come with your problems.
Mm-hmm.
And we have gardeners talking about no dig.
So who's involved in all of this? Because that's your 7 day a week.
Well, I do speakers. Alistair does logistics. Mac does tents. Hannah does artwork, presentation, how it looks, and music.
And Alistair and Hannah, son and daughter, keeping it in the family.
Yeah.
We'll look forward to that.
Yeah, you've got to come.
Yeah, I certainly would, because I need to see that garden finished. And I need my hit of beef and onion crisps.
Yeah.
Now, the what if question. Mm. If this hadn't turned out the way it has, what would you have done? Was there something else in sort of like your earlier years that you thought, I could do this for a career?
I would have stayed in television.
Now, is it right? Were you in Doctor Who?
Yeah, I'm in The Green Death.
The Green, yeah.
Playing the flute. Because I was in a rock band, and I went from the rock band to the BBC. And I used to play session music at night, and I was quite often practicing in my lunch hour.
Right.
And Barry Letts was the then producer of Doctor Who, and he heard me and he said, you teach me the flute and I'll get you into Doctor Who. And that's how it happened.
Wow. I saw that, obviously, sort of like doing a little bit of research. I'm going to really have to check if that's the case.
Blink, you'll miss me.
Now, talking about rock groups, I was listening on Spotify last night to Marsupilami.
Oh, God.
So tell us about that. How did that come about?
I was at art college and my flatmate told this bunch of long-haired guys that I play the flute. I'm classically trained. And they said, come and play with us. I said, no, I'm classically trained. I can't possibly play with you. that was it. I mean, within literally months, they had a record contract because of me.
Two albums?
Mm. Yeah, unfortunately, the lead singer, I hope he doesn't hear this, but he really can't sing in tune.
Well, I was going to say, after 40 years, ABBA have reformed. Is there going to be a Marsupilami? Maybe not after that.
No, they did try to get me to... Oh, that was so embarrassing. I actually went down and saw them for the 40th, I think it was, Glastonbury. They wanted us to reform. So I went down to the farm where we used to all live together, and they were just where I left them. None of them had done anything
in
that time. They were all where I left them.
Oh, that's incredible. And here you are.
Well, I've got a completely different life.
Do you look back on those early days? Because you played alongside Bob Dylan and the Kinks.
Mm, yeah.
Incredible.
Pink Floyd.
Wow.
Elton John. Yeah, lots. I look back thinking how lucky I was to escape unscathed.
And do you play? Do you still play the flute?
Occasionally.
Yeah.
My daughter had my flute and my son had my clarinet and sax. Mm.
And an art college background as well, similar to myself.
It was called Somerset College of Art in those days.
The Somerset College. And what was your
ceramics.
Wow.
Yes. Loved it. Absolutely loved it.
So a possible career there, I guess, potentially could have done.
No, I didn't see that. I was actually killing time because I wanted to get my English language. I failed it 7 times and I wanted to go to Royal College of Music, but I needed English in those days and dyslexia didn't exist.
Right. Okay. But that hasn't stopped you, clearly.
Well, no, because when I do the botanical names, I line up all the letters underneath each other so that I can make sure that I've got them all in, because I really do switch the letters around.
Oh, okay. Oh, I see.
Yeah.
With the success of Jekkers, obviously the herbs, I just wondered, who does the cooking at home?
Me.
And I've heard, well, I've seen, that you do a pretty mean dessert, pretty mean pudding. And what's like basil panna cotta, bay ice cream?
Yeah, bay ice cream. Oh, love bay ice cream. Yeah, bay ice cream is really easy, right? I'm a yellow label lady,
mm-hmm.
Yeah? So I buy anything that's on offer.
Yeah.
And if you go to the one beginning with W, Waitrose, on a yellow label day, and they always have set days that are yellow labels, you can get their Madagascan vanilla custard.
Lovely. I love custard.
Heat that up slowly.
Yeah.
2 bay leaves, 2 cardamom.
Oh, right. That's my kind of cooking.
Okay.
Yeah. Right.
Just to simmer.
Mm.
Turn off the heat. Let it cool down in there. Strain it. Ice cream maker.
I'm on. When you got me at Madagascan custard, it's like, I can eat custard from a tin or a packet or whatever.
Well, there you go. Right. It's that easy.
That's going to be done. What's next? I mean, we've got the book. You've mentioned the book.
Herbfest. Garden.
Mm-hmm.
Can that do for the moment?
Oh, I'm not sure if that's enough. Is there anything, or have you had like a professional or personal bucket list of things, I want to do this?
No, I haven't got what I want to do. I've got places I want to go.
Okay.
To see herbs growing in their natural habitat. I'm very lucky. I've managed to travel a lot of the world on cruise ships, lecturing. And so my best trip was for the RHS, where I went from Bangkok to Mumbai via the Andaman Islands. That was stunning, and I saw herbs. It was just so wonderful. And I've also done the Caribbean as well.
Yeah.
But I really want to go to Asia. I would love to go to China. I've been to China once, but I really want to go and see the plants growing properly.
Mm.
And I'd also love to go to Japan. I'd love to go to New Zealand. I've been to Australia, but I'd love to go to New Zealand. And so I think it's more the travel than anything else. But now that I'm old, I do like to travel in comfort. I'm afraid the roughing it days are over. I like to know that I'm going to have a bed.
Yes.
You know, yeah. And a pillow.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So travel and taking time out from your 7-day-a-week business is going to be interesting.
That would also be very nice.
And obviously Mac will need to come along with you as well.
My cabin boy, of course. Okay. But Charlie's getting us insured now. It's so difficult. Oh, You wait. The next problem is, once you get over 70, getting insurance to go anywhere.
Yeah, we just had a conversation about age. We're all heading in the same direction, so I've got that to look forward to. Jekka, thank you so much for taking time out today.
Thank you, it's been delightful. Thank
you. It's been lovely coming here. Thank you for taking me around. Back to the bovril and onion plant. Thank you.
Take care.
Well, inspirational, mind-blowing, ambitious, passionate, enthusiastic. The list of words to describe Jekka go on and on. It's clear, as many nursery men and women out there will already know, that to run a successful nursery, so many skills and so much knowledge of both plant growing and business acumen is required, let alone the total commitment in terms of time and effort into the business. And alongside that, searching for gaps in the market, keeping on trend with popular and appropriate plants, keeping an eye on sustainability, biodiversity, and indeed climate change. It's clearly not for the faint-hearted. I'd like to thank Jekka, Mac, Alistair, and Hannah for their hospitality, and to Jekka in particular for keeping me fed and watered on the day. Do keep an eye out for her Herb Fest next year, when you can go along, see the nursery, and the incredible garden that is currently under construction. It's going to be mind-blowing. For more information, head over to the website, jekkas.com, jekkas.com, where there's a raft of incredibly helpful information about herbs, growing herbs, the Jekkapedia, events, and of course, Jekka's books, and lots, lots more. And you can follow Jekka on her Instagram account, Jekka's Herb Farm, as one word, and I'll pop links to the website and her account in the episode notes. Well, thank you so much for listening, and I hope you enjoyed that as much as I did. Now, don't forget to follow and subscribe, as yes, there's still more to come. Value for money here, folks, value for money. And if you can leave a review, I'll be your best friend forever and ever. But don't let that put you off. All joking aside, leaving a review is really great, as it helps to promote the podcast and lets others see what we're all about here. Well, it's time for me to get sorted on a few herbs for my garden, so I'll bid you all a very good week. Happy gardening, and I'll see you all next week. Bye-bye for now. Bye-bye.